Hello, I'm Rosie Perez, and you're listening to Food Fridays with Lenet Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org.
If you are among those who sadly missed the New York International Olive Oil Competition that's held in New York each spring, don't despair, because we're devoting this week's Please Explain segment to finding out all about olive oil. And joining us are Luigi DiPaolo, a third-generation expert olive oil importer and the co-owner of DiPaolo Fine Foods in New York City's Little Italy, and Nancy Harmon Jenkins, a writer and food historian who's the author of the new Mediterranean Diet Cookbook published by Bantam. She joins us from Tuscany, where she's working on another book about olive oil to be published by Houghton Mifflin next year. Hello to both of you.
How are you, Leonard?
Thank you.
Hi, Nancy. How are you?
And we're inviting
Very well.
We're inviting our listeners to join in. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Luigi, out of the apparently 700 extra virgin olive oils that were in competition, was it possible to declare any one the best?
Well, you know, I find that after tasting three or four different olive oils, you're going to sort of get your taste palate to be a little bit neutralized. But certainly, over a period of time and panel of good judges of olive oil, you are able to determine certain characteristics on olive oil that will be very pleasing. But you have to understand something. It's very hard to judge 700 different olive oils when you're judging olive oils from different olive types, different climates. You know, each one is going to be wonderful for its own right. So if you have to judge olive oil, you have to judge olive oil, in my opinion, from the same area.
So this is not, this is different than a wine tasting where you go through a series of Bordeaux Cabernets and then you say, I like this one the best. Here in an olive oil competition.
Can I interject something?
Yeah, sure.
Here? You don't go to a wine tasting to determine the best wine in the world. You go to a wine tasting to determine what's the best Bordeaux or what's the best Vermentino. And similarly, I think it's kind of ridiculous to claim that an olive oil is the best in the world. It depends on what you want it for, what you use it for, what your own taste preferences are. It's just kind of off the wall, it seems to me, to try and set up these categories.
Well, how long ago did people begin to harvest olives for oil, Nancy?
Do we know? Millennia ago. I mean, one of the most ancient records we have is from Syria, from a wonderful site that we don't know whether it's going to survive what's happening in Syria or not, but it's called Ebla. It's north of Aleppo. And there we have actual records from the royal palace of a considerable olive oil industry in 2600 B.C.
So the Middle East first, I guess.
Yeah, the Middle East first. It seems pretty clear that Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Israel, that region was where olives were first harvested and made into oil. And that's where the first major industries were, too. But they spread very rapidly across the Mediterranean. And there's some thought that the olive tree actually is indigenous to many parts of the Mediterranean. In other words, what spread was the olive oil technology, not the trees themselves.
Now, Lou, where are most of the olives that we use for olive oil grown today?
Well, you have quite a few countries that are very prominent in olive oil. Probably the largest producer, probably about almost 50% of the production comes from Spain. But you have also from Africa and Morocco and South Africa, Greece, Tunisia.
And now California.
California, well, California always had olives but olive oil was always played down. They usually just ate the fruit of the olive, you know, but today, good olive oil is coming out of California. But we have olive oil from Chile and from Argentina.
And Australia. Don't forget Australia and New
course,
Zealand. Though.
Australia. You know, I mean, you need that certain climate that will be good for olive oil.
Now, Nancy, you're in Tuscany. Is that because you think that's a particularly good place to study olive oil?
Well, it's partly that. I have 150 trees of my own here that we harvest every year in October and make our own oil out of them. I've been living here off and on for about 40 years. So I do think Tuscan oil is the best, but that's just because it's the one that I know the best. I've had lots of delicious oils from many other parts of the world, but I always come back to Tuscan in the end, partly because it's familiar.
Well,
it's like your mother's pot roast. Your mother's pot roast is always better than anybody else's pot roast.
So is there a little bit of a bias here? Because, Lou, you're also selling Italian, mostly Italian olive oils in your store.
Well, I sell only Italian olive oil. And, you know, I try to get a good representation of all of the 18 regions of Italy that produced olive oil, soon to be 19, by the way. You know, Italy's comprised of 20 regions. 18 of now have actively growing olive trees for olive oil production. And I take a personal interest of going from one region to region, sometimes province to province, to get the typical indigenous varietal olives for this type of olive oil.
Getting back to the idea of wine tasting, the winemakers talk about terroir, how important the soil and the microclimate is to the taste of the wine. Even using the same grape, you get different kinds of wines at different parts of the world. Does that apply to olives as
absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely. I'm going to give you an example. There is one particular olive. It's called the Nocciolata. It's a very popular olive in Sicily. And I spend a lot of time in Sicily for olive oil. And most of the olive oil that I get is from two sections of Sicily, but one is from the area of Trapani. The Nocciolata olive there is very large and very, very meaty and gives a tremendously fruity characteristic. Now, if you go into the inland of Sicily, which is very dry and barren, almost looks like the moon in the area of near Caltanassetta, this area here, the same olive, is about half the size, and it's very intense, and it gives you this tremendous, what we call in Italian, pizzica, or a pinch, a little pepper finish in the back of your throat, much more than you would find from Trapani. Same olive variety, same region, completely different soil composition and climate. Remember, Trapani's by the sea. The area of Caltanassetta is in the center in a more dry area.
Now, Nancy, as I understand it, you can't just eat an olive off the tree, even if it's ripe.
No. It's pretty. There are a couple of varieties that people, in Puglia especially, do you know where Puglia is? It's
sure.
The heel of the Italian boot.
Yeah.
And down there, they have a variety of black olives that they will cook right off the tree. They'll roast it in olive oil. It's quite delicious. But most olives really taste pretty foul. So you have to ask yourself, who was the first person who discovered that this disgusting fruit could actually become something quite marvelous? And I think people discovered olive oil before they discovered that olives could be made edible. I think that they saw that, you know, when the olive was mature, it had this rich fluid in it that made them feel better when they ate it, and it didn't taste disgusting. And so they started manufacturing the oil, and then one thing led to another, and pretty soon they said, hey, what are we going to do with these olives we forgot to press? And so they cured them and turned them into table olives.
Well, how do you press them? You just simply take the uncured olive and squeeze the juice out of it?
You know, we say press, but in fact, very few people really press olives anymore. It's something called a kind of centrifugal extraction. The olives go into a stainless steel machine, and they are they're pounded into a paste, and then from that paste, the paste goes through something called a malaxer, a kind of kneading machine, and then out of that comes olive oil on the one hand, and the gunk that's left over on the other. It is a very clean, very fast system. And it means that we have much more high-quality extra virgin olive oil than we have ever had in the past. Because in the past, The olives were harvested. Sometimes they were kept for a couple of weeks in the mistaken belief that that you would increase the amount of oil in them that way. Then they were taken to the olive mill. They were pressed. They were crushed first by stones, and then they were spread on mats, and the mats were crushed. All of this exposing the olives and the olive paste and eventually the oil to a great deal of light and heat and all kinds of things that degrade the oil terribly. So what you had in the end, unless you were very, very careful, was not very good oil.
Well, Lou, finish your point.
Yeah, today it's so much easier to make good, clean olive oil that's what we all should be consuming, is good, clean olive oil and not the nasty, rancid stuff that so many of us are subjected to.
Now, there are all sorts of terms, Lou, that confuse people. Nancy mentioned extra virgin. You see the term cold press on a lot of bottles. What does cold press mean?
Cold press simply means that the oil is, from the olive is extracted at no more than, I'd say, 78, 80 degrees in temperature. If you subject it to a higher temperature, you probably could extract a little bit more juice, but you're going to lose more of the beneficial properties and flavor of the olive oil. And what Nancy had mentioned is so very, very important, is to harvest the olives and press it quickly. So, so very important.
And then we have the term virgin, and then extra virgin.
Simply means the acidity level. And, to be extra virgin, it needs to be in standards less than 0.8 acidity level.
Yes, but Lou, you know very well that any of your suppliers who had an olive oil that approached 0.8 would throw it out or give it to biofuel industry. Yeah. The high quality oils are 0.1, 0.2, sometimes as much as 0.3%, but no higher than that.
Nancy, I was only saying what they claim to make this point of saying extra virgin, but I didn't say that was the type of extra virgin olive oil
that I
brought here today. But I didn't.
You brought three olive oils.
That's
here.
Right. What Nancy's saying is right. You want to when purchasing really good olive oil, you want to get an acidity level less than 0.2.
Now, is that mentioned on the bottle? Is that put on the label?
Not necessarily.
So I would not know if I was getting a really high quality or less high quality simply by looking at the label.
You wouldn't buy it if it didn't have that information.
No, I understand. But I go into a local store, and there's a whole bunch of olive oils, and there's a really inexpensive one that says extra virgin. I have no idea what the acidity level is of that famous national brand. I'm not mentioning names like Berio and things like that, but would I assume that would be okay?
You know,
quite sure I understand your question.
No. My question is, if I can't tell what the level of acidity is in the brand that I see at the supermarket, how do I know whether I'm getting one that is going to be good or not?
You don't, and that's why you don't buy it unless it has that information on it.
Well, you can go to a person that understands olive oil, a place that sells it. And one of the best ways to do it is to get a little information, either through a purveyor that you trust. And that's really the key in purchasing any kind of food, but especially olive oil. To merely get a bottle of extra virgin olive oil is not enough information to say this is something special. And sometimes, you know, you look at a price, and you say, wow, this price is really good. There's reasons why some things are more money than others.
Now, Nancy, you make olive oil. Do you have better years like winemakers?
Oh, yeah. And olives are like apples. They produce more in every other year. So traditionally, what people did was put aside everything from one harvest to make sure they had enough to get through the next harvest. You can control that through irrigation, but if you irrigate the trees, then you probably will have a lower content of phenols in the olive oil, and that's not a good thing to have. So you go with Mother Nature, And, you know, it also depends on the weather that particular year. If you have frost during the budding season, or if you if your harvest gets delayed because it's raining, there are all kinds of things that can enter into that. Hail is something that we get here. I'm up in the mountains behind Cortona, and we get hail a lot, and that can be very damaging in the summertime to the budding fruit, because if the fruit gets bruised, then it starts to deteriorate, and a deteriorating olive will never make good oil.
Now, Lou, we're going to taste, I'm going to taste three olive oils that you brought here.
Right.
Can you tell just by tasting oil when you're going out on a buying trip to stock your store whether the olives have gone through that kind of those weather conditions?
Well, for one thing, you do know that the conditions of the year, you know, sometimes, as Nancy mentioned, sometimes you can get snow late in the season just as the flowers are just starting to come out, and that could really be detrimental, and you'll get a low yield. You won't get as many olives, and the naturally the price might be higher that year. But the surviving olives still might be good, you know, in flavor and quality. But I go to Frantoia, Now, Frantoia is a place where they actually press the olives, and I usually try to select from what we call a tenuta, or an estate, a place where they not only grow their own olives, they press them on site within a few hours of the harvest and bottle it almost immediately. You know, some people like to let the olive oil rest a little bit. It tones it down, but it's going. And what I brought here today is three very different olive oils from three very different areas.
And we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll taste them. We'll take calls from our listeners. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. My guests are Luigi DiPaolo, who is the co-owner of DiPaolo Fine Foods on the corner of Mott and Grand Streets in Lower Manhattan, and Nancy Harmon Jenkins, who is the author of the new Mediterranean Diet Cookbook, which is published by Bantam. Stay with us for more. We're back with today's Please Explain look at olive oils. And my guests are Nancy Harmon Jenkins, who is a writer, food historian, and an olive oil maker. She's the author of the new Mediterranean Diet Cookbook, which is published by Bantam. And Lou DiPaolo, who is an expert on olive oil, because he goes regularly to... How often do you go to Italy?
I'm there usually between 2 and 4 times a year.
To taste olive oils and cheeses and stuff.
Yeah, but olive oil just in the harvest period.
Which is when?
For me, it's between October and the beginning of November. I like my olive oils to be pressed in the early part of the season.
And he is the co-owner of DiPaolo Fine Foods, which is on the corner of Mott and Grand Streets. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also write us on Facebook or Twitter. And before we get to those calls and the things that people are writing in, you brought three olive oils here, all from Italy. One is called Garda Orientale.
That's right. That's from the area of Lake Garda. Orientale refers to...
So that's the north.
It's the northern part of Italy. And the fact that it says Orientale refers to the fact that it's from the eastern banks of Lake Garda. Now, Lake Garda is one of the most northern parts where olives actually grow, but there's this unique microclimate because of the lake. It's a glacial lake, and it's surrounded by basically the Alps. And you get that cold air dropping down, but the warmth of the lake creates a fog, and along the banks, they're able to grow olive groves, and they have old olive trees there. This is this is from the Garganya olive, which is indigenous to that area, and it's very delicate, very, very smooth, and hardly any what we call, as I mentioned before, that pizzica, or that little pinch that you get in the back of your throat.
Yeah, no pinch here, just a very smooth olive
oil.
Are you
guys tasting those while I'm listening?
I'm tasting them. Unfortunately, I can't hand it over to you through the telephone.
I'm so jealous.
But and it's this is just the most subtle olive oil, you can imagine. Nancy, how warm does it have to do olive trees have to be in? How much warmth do they have to be in to produce olives?
It's not so much the warmth as it is the lack of cold. I suppose that sounds kind of odd, but what I mean is they don't like a long period of deep frost in the wintertime. That will kill them. As it did in Tuscany in, when was that, Lou, 86?
Yeah, winter, in the
famous
in the
winter of 86?
Mid-80s, yeah, I don't remember
the
exact.
And a lot of olive trees died off. But the interesting thing is that even among the die-offs, a lot of them have come back now. The olive tree is really an extraordinarily strong tree. Some people tell me that the only thing that will really kill it off is too much water. If it stands in water, its roots will die. But, of course, it's a very dry climate around here. So harsh winters it doesn't like at all. It would never grow in Maine, which is my other home in the world. It probably wouldn't grow in New York State unless global warming proceeds by leaps and bounds. But it will grow in deserts. It grows in the desert in Tunisia. It will grow in a kind of lush climate in certain parts of Catalonia and in parts of southern Italy. And it will grow in a very temperate climate like the one we have here in Tuscany or on the island of Crete, for instance.
Well, the second bottle here that I'm tasting from is called Maracco.
Maracco.
Maracco. I never know where the two C's are. Yeah. Masaccio has two C's and... But anyway, this is from where?
It's from Trapani, Sicily. And this is a blend of three different olives that grow on one farm. It's if you notice, there's a little seal on each bottle, Leonard. It's what we call a DOP seal. Mm-hmm. I wanted to bring three bottles of olive oil that have certification to say that it's traditional from that specific area.
And this is very fruity.
Extremely fruity. It has an aroma of freshly cut grass with a green tomato finish. It's really a special olive oil, especially great with vegetables. The first one, however, I would just want you to know, is one of the best olive oils for lake fish. It seems like the area goes together. Along Lake Garda, that delicate olive oil for a lake fish is great.
And then the third one is says oleo, extra virgin olive oil, biologico.
Biological means it's organic. Mm-hmm. It's also, these are all, again, I mentioned DOP with that little seal certification. But the last one is what we call, it's from the area of Assisi Spoleto in Umbria. And
it's got a lot of pepper in it.
A lot of pepper finish. It's the Moriolo olive, this one, this particular one, 100%. It's very, very intense. A lot of pizzica goes great with beans, goes great with meat, if you want. And it's my favorite on soup. I just drizzle a little on soup after the soup is prepared.
So you don't have to put pepper on it. When the guy comes to your table with that big pepper mill, you say, nah, I have some good olive oil.
Good olive oil that gives me that little pepper finish.
Would like him to come with a really good olive oil to the table instead of the pepper, but... A lot of times they don't come with good olive oil at all. They come with rancid olive oil, unfortunately.
We're going to take some calls from our listeners, starting off with Anne from the Meatpacking District. Anne, hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes. What's your question? Anne, you're on the air. You're hearing your radio on delay. Forget that. Just listen to the phone and talk, please. Okay, I'm going to move on. A bunch of people have been writing in. Yanni asks, what's the difference between Italian olive oil and Greek olive oil? Or I guess we could ask, say, Portuguese olive oil, Spanish olive oil, Tunisian olive oil. They're just all different?
Grape varietal. Olive varietal, as well as climate. You know, it's going to make a difference. You know, and
can you tell if you had a blindfold test, would you be able to say, oh, this is definitely from Tuscany, this one is from northern Greece?
Well, I usually find
go ahead,
Nancy.
Go ahead, Lou.
I was going to say that, you know, certainly I could depict different characteristics in olive oil, and I certainly can taste what Spanish olive oil has a certain aftertaste for me. Greek olive oil for me tends to always be a little bit more delicate and sweet. But if you're going to ask me in a blind tasting, where is this olive oil from? You know, I'll be guessing. I'm not going to say that I'm going to be able to pinpoint it.
Another listener, Michael in Jersey City, asks, how has globalization affected olive farming? Nancy?
Wow, what a question. I would say it has affected it in a way. There's a system that's very popular in California called super high-density planting, where the trees are planted very, very close together, so much so that from a distance it looks like a vineyard rather than an olive grove. And they're kept pruned very low so that they can use mechanical harvesters and mechanical pruners, and they can harvest with a minimum amount of human labor, which keeps the cost very low, and they can get the olives into the press or into the extractor within 12 hours maximum of harvesting them. So that's the biggest innovation that's taken place in olive oil farming, I think, in recent years. Whether that's directly an effect of globalization, I don't know. Globalization, I think of more as when, you know, a lot of companies get together and become economic powerhouses. And I don't see that happening in olive oil because there isn't that much money in it.
Although there have been a number of scandals where people have taken olive oils from different parts of the world and labeled them as Italian or labeled them as Spanish.
Absolutely. It happens all the time. I mean, those bottles that claim to be Italian, I mean, they have a beautiful picture of Tuscan peasants tramping the olives with their feet, and they have an Italian name on them, and most of them are filled with Spanish Pequal olive oil because Spain produces far more olive oil than any of the rest of the world, and something like 70% of that comes from a single cultivar called the Pequal, which is grown throughout Andalusia, and if it's properly handled, it makes a very fine olive oil, but if it's improperly handled, and most of it is, it makes rancid, fusty oil that nobody wants, and now, that's what goes into most of those bottles with the fancy Italian names on them. I don't mean by that the premium oils, not the kind of oils that Lou DiPaolo sells, but the kind of oils that you think are Italian that you find on your supermarket shelf.
Now, Lou has asked, what pesticides are used in the farming of the oils that you import?
Well, if they don't really use pesticides. Most of these olive oils that I have here are done in organic farming, even though they're not listed as organic farming. They require certain certifications, and they're so small that they don't even bother doing that. But if you go through the fields and you as you're walking through and you're getting spiders all over you, you know that these olive oils are not being adulterated with pesticides.
Bob from Rego Park, hi, you're on the air. Bob, are you there? Okay, Bob. Well, that's something's gone wrong here because of the second caller that is just not responding. Bob, are you there? Okay, forget it, Bob. I don't know what to do when people go put the phone down, walk away, and then I put them on the air. Andy wonders about the cosmetic uses of olive oil. She says it's a fantastic makeup remover. Is that true? It's
much more than a makeup remover.
It probably is that. It's also good for your hands. It's very good for scar tissue. If you get a deep cut of some sort and you rub olive oil on it, it helps the scar tissue heal up. It's just terrific for that. It always has been used cosmetically and medicinally. And, you know, the ancient Greek athletes used to rub their bodies down with oil. Not to make themselves slippery, but to clean themselves after they had been out there doing, you know, throwing the discus and the javelin and all of that. They would come back and they would rub on olive oil, and then they would take the scraper and scrape off the dirt and the sweat and the olive oil and leave their arms beautifully soft.
Now, are there actual healthful benefits, Lou, to olive oil?
Today more and more research has been done, and the fact that olive oil is an antioxidant, and it actually is breaks down the bad cholesterol. It's noted to be good for your coronary arteries. Yes, there are a lot of benefits for olive oil. Plus, I think it's good for your cellular structure.
But we're talking about extra virgin olive oil, Leonard, not just regular olive oil.
Now, how do we store this? This is always a concern. You don't put it in the refrigerator, do you?
You know, refrigerating olive oil gels at about 45 degrees Fahrenheit. And that in itself is not really that detrimental to it. But, you know, the constant shock of bringing it in and out at this level will definitely change the characteristic of the oil.
And
store it away from heat. You know, there's four.
And how long should I?
There's four enemies to olive oil. Okay, four major enemies. One of them is, as Nancy mentioned before, is heat and light, oxygen and time. So the fact that is, for me, the olive oil is never fresh enough. The fresher it is, the better it is. The fact that you keep the olive oil in a dark container, you notice that these bottles, Leonard, the listeners can't see it, but they're all dark bottles, protects it against the light. Keep it away from excessive heat. Store it not above the stove in the pantry, above the stove where the hot air rises, in below where it's cooler. And certainly try, once you especially open up your bottle of olive oil, try to use it within a reasonable amount of time.
Because often you get a really nice olive oil that you want to use for certain kinds of occasions, and then there are the other olive oils that you would use for cooking, and they'd be less expensive. So you're actually, if you like olive oil, you're using a lot of olive oil.
Well, for sure. You know, this type of olive oil.
Absolutely.
That, I brought here.
Can I put in something here about cooking with olive oil? There is a myth that goes around and around and around on the internet that you can't cook with extra virgin olive oil, and that's just rubbish. It's one of the best oils for cooking with because it's stable at high heat. It doesn't break down. And it creates a wonderful flavor in, you know, if you fry an egg in olive oil, you've got not just a delicious egg, but also delicious olive oil flavors on it, too. So I would urge everybody to cook with extra virgin olive oil. I never use anything else. And most of the people around me here in Tuscany never use anything else.
Not
either.
Butter, ever?
In May and June, we have a little extra butter here because the Canina cows are taken away from their calves. And so then we have a couple of things that we make with butter. But the rest of the time, nothing. Cakes, cookies, everything is made with olive oil.
We have run out of time, unfortunately. Would you believe it? There's so much more to talk about olive oil. But
I know. We could go on all night, I think.
But... Well, it's night in Italy, oral afternoon for us here in New York.
Yeah.
You're so lucky to be there in Tuscany right now. I'm so envious. Nancy Harmon Jenkins, who is the author of the new Mediterranean Diet Cookbook. You're working on another book that's going to be published next year?
In 2014 by Houghton Mifflin. It doesn't have a title. It's just about olive oil. We have to figure out a title for it.
And Luigi DiPaolo is the co-owner of DiPaolo Fine Foods in New York City. In Little Italy on Mott and Grand Street, where you also can get incredible cheeses and all sorts of prepared foods. But how many olive oils do you carry?
I have I carry quite a few, but of this type of character, about 25.
Wow.
25 very special olive oils.
Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.